This morning we continue our study in the book of Ecclesiastes, and I might stop next Sunday, I don't know. But it seems that I've been helped as I've studied these verses of Scripture, and some of you have expressed the fact that you've also been helped. So if that's true, then I want to do everything I can to help us understand the futility of life without God, and the fact that even God's people can get so wrapped up in material things that we really lose sight of who we are, and we forget this basic truth. Just about everything that we can see won't last very long, and if it does, it's not worth very much. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 3, the question, what profit hath a man of all his labor which he takes under the sun? Of course, profit is what's left. What's left? What do we have left after we've worked as hard as we can all of our lives? What is there that is left of that particular kind of labor? Well, I own my house. Okay. I've worked hard. I own a farm. Okay. Worked hard. I've got some CDs. Okay. But how long are those going to last? And as we'll look at perhaps this afternoon, whose will they be after you're gone, and what will that person do with it? It really is transitory. I think that's the point the writer's trying to make. It won't last long, even with you handling it, because you won't last long. Well, I'm not trying to give a lesson in pessimism, and I'm sure that that's not what the writer has in mind, that all of us might look at life and become pessimistic to the point that we'd be willing to forfeit any years we have left by saying there's not anything to it and not anything worth living for, might as well just end it all. That's not what our writer's trying to get us to see. I think he really wants us to see that there are some things worth living for. There are some things worth working for. And there is a place where we can direct our energy and our labor and find great happiness and great peace of mind. But it's just futile for us to spend time and energy into that which moths and rust can break in and destroy, and thieves can break in and steal. It really is not that rewarding. Now in chapter 2, this man begins now to describe to us his search for an answer to this particular question, what profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh under the sun? What can you get out of life? What can you get out of life if you live your life pursuing the things that have to do with this earth? Verse 1, he states, I said in mine heart, that is, I determined, I made a resolution, that I will prove thee with mirth. That is, I'll answer the question with mirth. And therefore enjoy pleasure. And behold, I will prove thee with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. And behold, this also is vanity. I think that the writer overheard the raucous laughter of those involved in what we would call sensual activity. Do you ever envy people that are having a good time? I have. I remember walking by the cafes and juke joints that existed at the little towns of Lynn and Strawberry. That's about all I knew growing up. But I remember going by those places and hearing the jukeboxes and hearing the people inside just laugh and laugh and laugh, and hear them come outside. They were chatting with one another and laughing with one another. They got in their cars, and I envied those people. I just knew they knew something I didn't know, and they were having a real good time. I think that's what happened to the writer. I think this man said, I'd like to investigate that, see what there is to it. It didn't take long for him to come to this conclusion. I said of laughter, it's mad. I don't think it took this man long to see through the superficiality of this kind of lifestyle, because he immediately concludes that it is literally crazy. I think that was his conclusion. He probably thought, now these people know something I don't know, but after he tried what they had been doing, he immediately said, this is crazy. This is no way to live. This is not an answer to life's problems. This is not going to solve anything. And he said, of mirth, what doeth it? Now just think about that time when you seem to have had the most fun that you've ever had in the flesh. I'm not talking about just enjoying being with your family or a vacation you had with your children. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the sensual lifestyle of those people who live on this earth when they exclude God. I'm talking about that really good time you had when you had all the things you needed to satisfy the flesh, and after it was all over with, whenever you step back and look at the thing and you came to this conclusion that he came to, what is there to that? What is there to all that? What's left after you do this? After you spend your time and energy doing this, what is there that's left? After you spend your money pursuing all these things, what is there that's left? Well, there's not anything left. It's still vanity and vexation of the spirit. Emptiness. Not anything to that. You try the nightclubs. You try giving yourself to every form of sensuality, and after you're all over with, you find out there's not anything to that. It's empty. It doesn't give you anything that's soul satisfying. In verse 3, I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine. Now here's the resolution that he made. He said, I want to get involved in living the good life, not the madness of sensuality and the silliness of those who are drunken. I don't want to get involved in this mad, crazy kind of lifestyle that I see people involved with. I'd like to be a connoisseur of fine things. I don't want the dives of that come with the roadside inns and things of that nature. Let's forget the honky tonks. And let's forget country western. Let's forget that stuff. There's nothing to it. But maybe we can move over to West Little Rock. Maybe we can get into the real good things of life. We can get in the country club. We can become connoisseurs of fine wine. And we can make ourselves all the things that are really, really upper crust type things, and not this low life kind of lifestyle. I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom. That is, I'm not going to become a fool and live like a fool, live like a crazy person, but still I'm going to live the enhanced lifestyle that comes to those who are able to take the edge off their inhibitions with a fine glass of wine, a few cocktails, mix and mingle with the real good people of this world. I'm going to keep my wisdom, not going to do dumb, stupid things, and to lay hold on folly till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. He said, I'll take this approach, moderation, education, and I'll see if I can't solve the problem, come to a good, solid conclusion that here's the way you ought to live your life. And when life is over, if you live it this way, then you're going to find that there's some really something solid. And I think he found that this also, we'll see, was ended in the same way. Now here's some of the things that he pursued as a part of this upper crust lifestyle. Sort of a PhD kind of lifestyle. Here's a man who's not involved in drunkenness. Here's an art collector. This kind of lifestyle. Sort of Pettit Jean Mountain lifestyle. I made me great works. I built houses. There's nothing wrong with building houses. Evidently, this man decided he would simply be a man who would build something that would catch the admiration and the eye of every other person. There's a lot of satisfaction in building things. So he said, I built some really great things. I built houses, I planted vineyards, and I made gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them, all kinds of fruits. Now this is not something that the common man could do. This is on the size and scale of the king of Israel in Jerusalem, a man of fantastic wealth. Now, he wasn't doing the work himself. He's got the engineers, and he's overseeing it and directing it. I made me pools of water. That is, I built ponds or places to hold water so that I could irrigate my trees. And of course, this all calls for servants. And you know, that's always been something of a measure of a person's success, isn't it? Can you own servants? Do you have any servants? How many servants do you have? He said, I had servants and maidens, and I had servants born in my house. And these were the most loyal kinds of servants they were, so they were to be really a part of your life. Servants born in your house mean that they really had a loyalty to you, and so they were the best kinds of servants. Also, I had great possessions of great and small cattle, every kind of animal, sheep, goat, camels, all these things. I had all of these things. And I had more than anybody else. That's sort of a measure, too. And it's not how much we've got, but do we have more than anybody else? You know, a lot of people have a lot of these and have a lot of that, but do I have more than anybody else has got? Now, that ought to satisfy, shouldn't it? You know, if I've got more cattle than any man, if I've got more sheep than any man, I've more oxen than any man, if I've just got more of whatever is worth something, if I've just got more of it than anybody else has got. I've got the biggest house in Little Rock, and I have a Jaguar and a Mercedes and a Cadillac, and that's the one I go shopping in case it gets hurt, you know, wrecked. And I've got sports cars, and you know, I've got 12 of this and 20 of that, and I have more than anybody else. I have more than anybody else. Now that makes me unique. And if there's anything that can make anybody happy, it ought to be having more than anybody else. I gathered me also silver and gold. Let's don't forget money, okay? Let's just stack the stuff up, okay? Let's just stack up a stack of gold and stack up a stack of silver so that I've got more gold and I've got more silver than anybody else in town. And what about peculiar treasures of kings? Paintings, artworks, whatever you want to accumulate. I've got men singers, women singers, the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. Now, there's some confusion about the things that are described here. There are those who believe that he is defining in some of this the concubines that Solomon had, although we're not sure. It seems to indicate that. But he's simply saying, any time I wanted to listen to music, any time I wanted entertainment of any kind, I could have it. In verse 9, so I was great. Now this is not egomania. This is not an egocentric type thing from the viewpoint that it wasn't true. I was great. I accomplished greatness. Greatness in whose eyes? Well, I accomplished greatness in the eyes of my admirers because I had more than anybody else had. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. He's saying these are things that I actually planned this. I executed it. I was able to accomplish all these things. It was a result of my labor. I did these things. I was able to accomplish these things. These really things really came into being because of what I had done. Gold, servants, houses, expanded gardens, pools of water. Is there anything else? Is there anything else that you know of that you'd work your lifetime for to accomplish and to receive? Would you do this if you had a chance? I mean, if you had a chance, I mean, if you had the money, you had the resources, would you find you a mountaintop somewhere? Would you find yourself 40 acres on the river? What would you, I mean, if you really had the money to put it into practice, what would you do with it? So I'd build me something that every man who walked into it would envy me. That's what I'd do, brother. I'd get mama some furs and mama some furniture and mama a car that all the old sisters that she runs around with would just have to drop their mouths in envy. Awestruck. That's what I'd do. And I'd be happy. I mean, I would be happy Because I would have proven myself to my friends and to my enemies, and I would have proven myself to myself. I would be on top, and I would be filled with joy. I would be filled with laughter. Why, I'd be as happy as Elvis was when what? When he committed suicide. When he OD'd, right? He built a big house. Have about anything he wanted. Yeah, but you're going to say, but he didn't know how to handle it. You do, right? You know how to handle it, don't you? You know how to handle that kind of circumstance. You could make yourself happy, couldn't you? You would know how. You could take your chauffeur-driven limousine to the most expensive department store in Little Rock, and you could get out and go in and just buy and have them carry it out and put it in the back seat and put it in the trunk, and you could go home and put it on, and you would know the deep joy and satisfaction. You would be happy, wouldn't you? Well, I guess that's what we think. Now, this is several years' work that we're talking about here. This is not a month's experiment. This is several years' work. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. You see, that's what he'd been looking for, profit under the sun. He looked on it and he said, this isn't it. In 1952, I went to Hialeah, Florida to live with my brother, Stan. Primarily to go to school or get a job or learn a trade or something. And he just bought this corner lot and house in Hialeah, Florida, which was just a few blocks from Hialeah Racetrack, and a very nice neighborhood. And Stan didn't go to church, and I took advantage of his not going to church to not go to church either. We didn't have a lot of money, but we did have quite a bit of time, so you know, we'd never had grass that grew in a yard that it was supposed to grow there. And the only thing we'd ever cut grass with was a hoe. And so it's kind of fascinating to have a lawnmower and Augustine grass and a lot of shrubs and plants that grow naturally in Florida. And he put down a well where we could water it. And we put just hours and hours into that lawn and into his house. And it wasn't long till people drive by and look at it. It was fantastic. It was, Sunday evening, you know, after we'd spent Saturday and Sunday and the afternoons of the week, we'd just back off and look at it, and it was just, we manicured it, just trimmed it almost with scissors. It was, we really put our time and energy into it. Well, I surrendered to preach and came to Little Rock and hadn't been back to Florida in 3 or 4 years. And since I'd surrendered to preach, Stan, he'd gotten involved and work at First Baptist Church in Hialeah. And must have been 1956 or somewhere along there. 1957, 58, somewhere along there. We decided we could go back see Mother and Dad and visit Stan. I told Betty, I said, now you're going to see the prettiest yard you've ever seen in your life. You've never seen a yard like Uncle Stanley's got. It's got flowers and shrubs and grass. It's just perfectly level. You've never seen anything like it in your life. It's beautiful. When we drove up and I looked at it, I thought we've got the wrong house. The green grass was gone and sand spurs were growing and the shrubs were dying. I never seen anything look so neglected in my life. And I thought, man, what's happened to this guy? Well, he came in. We talked for a while, went outside walking around. I said, Stan, what in the world happened to your yard? I said, I just don't have time for stuff like that anymore. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, I got involved in the church, and he said, man, I need to visit, need to work, I need to study, and he said, I decided just let it go natural. I just got caught up in this other stuff. Well, maybe he neglected it a little bit too much, but I sort of doubt it. What happened? Well, you see, he had a change in value systems. Had a change in value systems. Now, I'm not saying we ought to just forget our yards, forget the cars, don't ever wash them, don't ever mow your yard. I don't mean that at all, but what I'm saying is, if that's all we have is our yard and our car and our house and our CDs, if that's all we have when we get to the end of life, you're going to come to the same conclusion that Solomon came to when he said, there's no profit to this. It didn't get me anywhere. It's all over with. You, someday you'll walk away from it and leave it. You know, all the old plantations that used to be the envy of the world, most of them are museums, overgrown, plantations are destroyed. But no one would have ever dreamed that such a thing would come true. Now, Solomon doesn't say this until the last chapter. But you know the conclusion he came to, and we'll be looking at how he experimented, things he went through. He said, hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments. That's the most important thing for me, and that's the most important thing for you. Aren't we a happy group of people? Aren't we just the most contented and gloriously happy people that have ever lived on God's earth? I mean, let's take our own city, the city of Little Rock, Arkansas, where we live. Aren't we happy? I mean, aren't we just filled with deep down, honest, godly satisfaction? Aren't our souls just being filled and thrilled with the things that are here and the things we have? No, it's a town of cynicism, pessimism, sensuality, grief, burdens, problems. We got more than anybody ever thought any of us would have. But it didn't. The point is, it didn't make us happy. It has not made us happy. And the underlying, bottom line is, it can't make us happy. And it won't make us happy. Because things get in control of us, things are not wrong. But it's when things control us, they control who we are and what we do and what we give our time and energy to, then it becomes wrong. We just got so many things, we can't turn any of them loose to do the things that are very important. You know, I read about our modern day parenting, and it used to be called raising kids. That's one fella was working on a project at the church we were trying to build. One of the men brought in some of his laborers, black laborers, and I asked one of them, I said, "Where do you live?" And he said, "I was reared up over at Widener." I know what reared up was. He meant reared, but he called it reared up. Most people just reared up. We used to talk about raising the kids. Now it's parenting. Parenting. We're practicing parenting. And we're talking about quality time and quantity time. You know, we really don't. Quality time is important. You know, good solid 30 minutes a day with your kid is worth more than 5 or 6 hours with your dad and mom when you weren't really doing anything important. I'm going to tell you something, that's not true. That's just not true. And I don't know the answer to all these problems, but I know that the answers that we're trying to give are simply not working. Whatever we've tried in education, it's not working, folks. Whatever we've tried in getting ahead, getting money, accumulating, it's not working. It's not doing what society, government, sociologists, it's not doing what they've told us it would do. It's just simply not happening. And I think most of the people of this world are looking back on other generations as an example of contentment and happiness, rather than saying, let's look at this right now. Look at this family right now. There's a happy family. There's a contented family. There are people who've got it all together. We're looking back. We're looking back at Grandpa's family. We're looking back at Daddy's family. And we're saying, tell us about the good old days. Why? Well, that was a time when people were happy. But there's not anybody that's being fulfilled and finding happiness as we see it today. Now, there's a few crazy people who are hung up on religion, who are not chasing these rainbows that we seem to see have a great deal of satisfaction and happiness in life. But, hey, we can't count on those people because we can't do like they do. Is it over with? Is it all over with? Well, to some extent, I rather think it is. Because I don't know that the world will ever turn its eyes off of itself and look unto Jesus and find the deep satisfaction that comes from being a servant of God. I didn't say a preacher, I said a servant of God. And that's how most of our ancestors found their place in this world and then subsequently found their happiness, is that they did not want the world to serve them with all that it had. They wanted to be servants of God, and their happiness came as a byproduct of their service to God. I've always said that any person who says to themselves, I'm going to get up today, this very day, I'm going to get out of bed, and I'm going to have me a barrel of fun, is in for solid disappointment. I mean, if you set your eye on having a good time, I want to have a lot of fun. I know tomorrow's Labor Day. Is Memorial Day, and you're going to get up and say, now tomorrow we're going to have more fun than any of us can stand, and that's just about what's going to happen. You'll have a fight before it's all over, because everything's going to go wrong, because it always does. It's already started out raining about half mad. Everybody's, you know, soaked. Lakes are full, chiggers in the grass. You know, we got this idea, if we just get up and we could just all get together, we could have this massive amount of fun, but it doesn't work that way. You'll not have your fun, your deep kind of satisfaction that you crave and I crave, until it becomes a byproduct of our devotion to God. Am I right? Is that true? Until it is a byproduct of our devotion to God. A byproduct of your devotion to your family. A byproduct of your devotion to that which is good and holy and noble and right. These things then, when we give ourselves to them, then the happiness and contentment we seek comes as a byproduct. Don't get the idea that there's no satisfaction in life. There is, but there's no satisfaction in living the lifestyle that the world sets. That's what Solomon found out. And that's what you'll find out if you seek to live your life that way.